One of my favorite cartoons growing up, and it is the best cartoon ever, was Bugs Bunny. Y'all remember Bugs Bunny? Not the new weird-looking ones, the old original Bugs Bunny. And one of my favorite things about Bugs Bunny, he was always finding a way to turn the tables on everyone, whether it was a monster or Elmer Fudd. There's one particular famous episode where Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck are arguing about whether it's duck season or wabbit season, and there's Elmer on the side with his shotgun just waiting for them to figure out if it's duck season or rabbit season. I want you to see how the tables turn. Let me just show you.
Wabbit season! Duck season! Wabbit season! Duck season! Wabbit season! Duck season!
Uh-oh.
Very, very quiet. We're hunting Elmers.
I show that to you just because I want to raise this question to you today. What do you do when the tables turn? How do you act? Sometimes and in some situations, you might feel as though you have no power, no agency, no ability to control your circumstances or the outcomes. You know, you need the job, and so you got to put up with the bad management or that horrible boss and the lousy working conditions. You're just a kid, so you got to do what everyone says. You're dependent on someone, and so you got to abide by their way of doing things. But what happens when the table turns and suddenly you've got the power? What happens when the shoe is on the other foot and suddenly you're the one with control? When you're no longer the newbie on the team? When you're the senior looking down on the freshman? When you get a promotion and now you're in charge of all the people who maybe were giving you a hard time, when others are depending now on you and you have power over them, what will you do when the tables turn and you find that you're the one with the power? When we left Joseph last week, the tables had turned. For those of you who missed it, I'll try and recap here in one sentence. Joseph went from being the favorite son in charge of his brothers who were older than him, called by God to lead his family, to being betrayed, sold into slavery. Then he went from slavery to prison. And then last week, we saw him go from prison to palace. And now he's second in command of all of Egypt. After 13 years of being kicked around by everyone, Joseph was the one now in charge. He's the one in control of all the food in all of Egypt. Everyone in the whole nation of Egypt had to come to him to get food because he was the one who put together the plan to save them from famine. But it wasn't just all the people of Egypt. All the nations around Egypt had to come to Joseph to get food, including his brothers, the ones who had sold him into slavery and betrayed him. This story I'm about to tell you this morning is a story about tables turning. So the famine hit, and Jacob and his family, they were running out of food. About a couple years in, they had no food. He sent his sons to go down to Egypt to buy food. Not all of his sons. He sent all of his sons except Benjamin and Joseph, because Joseph, as far as he knew, was dead, because that's what his older sons had told him. And Benjamin, he wouldn't let Benjamin leave his side. Once Joseph was gone, the only other brother he had by the same mother. Do you all remember Jacob had children by four women? Two were his wives, and the other two were their wives' concubines. And so he loved his one wife, Rachel. There was a whole story there. But she only had two sons, Joseph and Benjamin. Joseph, as far as he knows, is dead and gone. Benjamin's all he has left. He will never let Benjamin leave his side. So Jacob sends the other 10 sons down to Egypt, the ones who had betrayed Joseph and sold him into slavery, you know, because they didn't like the fact that he was in charge of them or that he was having dreams about them bowing down to him. And those brothers traveled all the way to Egypt to buy their food, and they wound up at Joseph's doorstep. Only they don't know it's him. And that leads us to this beautiful moment in Genesis 42. And you can follow along here. We're going to jump in and out of me telling the story and reading portions of it. You can follow along on our app and take notes. But Genesis 42, verse 6 says, "Now Joseph was the governor over the land. He was the one who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came, and look what they did. Bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground, just like Joseph had dreamed some over 13 years ago. And Joseph recognized his brothers, but they didn't recognize him. And Joseph remembered the dreams that he had dreamed of them. And talk about the shoe being on the other foot, right? Talk about the tables turning. What will Joseph do now? He literally holds their lives in his hands, the way they had held his life in their hands. What would you do? How would you act? Joseph looked at them and he said, I think you're spies. I think you've come here to just see where we're weak. And then he decided to hold them there for a few days and question them. And they insisted, no, we're not spies. We're your servants. We're here, just 12 brothers, the sons of one father. The youngest is with our father and the other one, he is no more. At least they remember him. But until that moment, Joseph didn't know what had happened after he was sold. He didn't know whether they had gone home and killed his younger brother Benjamin for spite because he was also one of the favorites. He didn't know if his father was alive or dead. So when he hears that his brother and father are alive, his heart must have leapt in his chest. And he instantly hatches a brilliant plan to test his older brothers. And he says, okay, I know what we'll do. If you're not spies, I have a simple test that will tell me whether you're being honest with me or not. I'm going to keep one of you here with me, and the rest of you go back and you get this younger brother you mentioned, and you bring him to me. And when you bring him to me, then I'll know you're being honest and you're not spies. And I'll let this other brother I'm going to keep with me go. That was a problem. Because like I said, there was no way their father Jacob would ever let Benjamin go. There's no way he was going to let him leave his side and go to Egypt. And so the brothers are in a pickle right now. Simeon is now being held as a prisoner in Egypt, but there's no way they're going to be able to convince their father to send Benjamin back to Egypt to get Simeon out. And they started bickering with each other, not knowing that Joseph could understand them because Joseph had been using a translator the whole time to speak to them. And so they didn't know that Joseph was overhearing them and knowing what they were saying. And I don't know how Joseph held it together when he heard them start to say, the truth is we're guilty concerning our brother Joseph. And that's why all this is happening to us, all this distress. We saw the distress of his soul when he begged and we wouldn't listen to him. That's why now this distress has come on us. And Reuben, the oldest brother, says, that's why I told you we shouldn't sin against the boy, but you wouldn't listen to me. So now, here comes the reckoning for his blood. And Joseph hears them agonizing over this, remembering what they had done to him. Seeing he's still on their mind, seeing they feel this guilt and distress. So he holds Simeon in Egypt, sends the brothers back. They load up their donkeys with their sacks of grain, and they leave. And they stop for the night on their way to sleep and get some lodging. They open up their sacks to give some grain to their donkeys, and they discover inside the sacks are the money bags that they had brought to buy the grain. Somehow the money's back in their sacks, and now they're terrified. Now they're going to think we stole the grain too. Like everything is looking bad for them. But the truth was Joseph had told his steward to put the money back in their sacks. He didn't want the money. He was giving them free food. Why? Why would he give them free food? They tried to kill him. They threw him in a pit. They sold him into slavery. Why is Joseph doing this? Then the nine brothers get home and they tell their father everything that happened. Then they say to their father, the only way to get Simeon out and to get more food is we have to bring Benjamin back with us the next time. And Jacob loses it. And he says, do you want me to take everything from me? I've lost Joseph. He's gone. I've lost Reuben. Now he's gone. And now you want to take Benjamin. And I'll lose him too. If anything happens to him, I'll die. He's all I have left. So Jacob refuses and said, there's no way. There's no way. Simeon's gone. We'll have to find some other way to get food. Day after day goes by. Their food stores start getting low until they're desperate and they need to go get food. They're like a week past when they needed to have gone to get food. Can you imagine feeling so powerless that the only choice you have is to risk your son to get food for your family? That's where Jacob is right now. Ultimately, he relents And he sends his sons back with Benjamin this time. They also brought double the money, and they brought gifts with them too. So when they get to Egypt and they come in to meet Joseph's steward of Joseph's house, they say, "We brought double the money because last time somehow the money got back in our bags. We didn't do it. Please, you know, don't think we were trying to steal. So we brought the money to pay for that grain and extra money now to buy the new grain. And we brought gifts too." And the steward of Joseph's house says, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, guys, peace to you. Don't be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has put treasure in your sacks for you. I received your money." Right there, that tells us two things. One, Joseph taught his steward in his home about who God is. And number two, Joseph saw everything he was doing as somehow in partnership with God. Everything he did, he was doing partnering with God. So they bring the brothers into Joseph's house. They give them water to drink. They wash their feet for them. They feed their donkeys. Then they tell them, "Hey, get ready. We're going to have a big lunch. Joseph's coming." But they don't know it's Joseph. So when Joseph gets home, they bring all their gifts to him. They bow in front of him again. And when Joseph sees Benjamin, his younger brother, who was a child, a baby when he left, he just breaks down in tears. He runs out of the room and he cries because his heart is just so full and he doesn't know what to do with himself. After a while, he washes his face and goes back in the room. And they sit down and they have lunch together and they laugh and enjoy the food together. But Joseph still didn't tell him that it was him because he had another test for his brothers. It came time to leave and Joseph again arranged that they'd get their sacks of grain, but that the money would be put back in so that they still were getting the food for free. But then he also told his steward, "I want you to take my personal silver cup and put it in Benjamin's sack." And so he did. The brothers leave. They don't know they've got the money back. They don't know that this silver cup is in Benjamin's sack. They get out of town. They travel just a little ways. And then suddenly here comes Joseph's steward with some other guys. Joseph sent after them. And they say, "Hey, you've stolen the silver cup that belonged to Joseph." And they're like, "No, we didn't. None of us took anything. Look, look, just take our sacks, open them up. If anyone took anything, you can kill the person who has the cup in their sack." And they pull the sacks down, and the first one opens it. See? Nothing. See? Nothing. All the way down the line until Benjamin, there's the cup in Benjamin's sack. The brothers, in just distress, start ripping their clothes. Have you ever been so distraught that you tore your clothes off? They start ripping their clothing. They take them all back to Joseph. They fall on the ground again in front of Joseph. And Judah becomes the spokesperson for the family, for the brothers. Before I tell you what Judah said, I want to remind you who Judah was. Judah is the fourth in line brother, but he's the one who ultimately will be the one who carries on the line. But Judah's the guy who sold Joseph into slavery. It was Judah's bright idea. Judah's the one who took Joseph and handed him to the slave traders and took the bag of money. And we know from other portions of scripture, Judah was an immoral, selfish guy. And so what we'd expect from Judah right now is he would say, "Okay, look, Benjamin's gone. We're just going to have to give him up. But if it saves our necks, fine." And we'd expect him to say, "We don't know what's wrong with our younger brother. He's spoiled like every youngest child is. He took your cup, I guess. So here, take him, give us back Reuben, and we'll be on our way." But he didn't say that. Instead, what Judah said was this. He said, "Sir, please, don't be angry with me. Let me speak to you. We've done everything you've asked. We brought our youngest brother, even though it broke my father's heart. Before we left, my father said to us, 'My wife had two sons, and one of them went away and never returned. Doubtless, he was torn to pieces by some wild animal. I've never seen him since. Now, if you take his brother away from me and any harm comes to him, you will send this grieving white-haired man to his grave.'" Remember, for 13 years, Joseph must have wondered what his father thought had happened to him, what it must have been like hearing about his father's grief there, how for years he didn't know that his father even remembered him, but now he's hearing that his father's grief is fresh to this day. And that grief that his father spoke of. It's there because of Judah and these other brothers. They're the cause of this. They're the ones who did this. They did this to Joseph. They did this to their father, Jacob. And now Joseph has the power to make them pay. But then he hears Judah still speaking. What could this treacherous brother still have to say? Judah goes on and says, "And now, my lord, I cannot go back to my father without the boy. Our father's life is bound up in the boy's life. If he sees that the boy is not with us, our father will die. We, your servants, will indeed be responsible for sending this grieving, white-haired man to the grave. My lord, I guaranteed my father that I would take care of the boy, and I told him, if I don't bring him back to you, I will bear the blame forever. So listen to what he says next. Please, my lord, let me stay here and be the slave instead of the boy, and let the boy return with his brothers. How could I return to my father if the boy's not with me? I couldn't bear to see the anguish it would cause my father." The brother who'd sold Joseph into slavery is here offering to trade himself and become a slave in their younger brother's place. Far from being the selfish, power-hungry, bitter traitors that Joseph had known, they cared about their youngest brother. They cared about their father. Not only did they care, they were ready to trade places. Joseph sent all of his attendants, all of his people out of the room so it could just be him and alone with his brothers. And he told his brothers, "Come here, close," so they could look into his face. And as they got close, where they could smell each other's breath, they looked into each other's eyes, and he could see the terror in their eyes. And he told them, "I am Joseph, the one you sold here into slavery." I don't know what comes after terrified. I've only ever gotten a terrified in my life. But whatever comes after terrified, I'm sure that's what they were feeling right there. For all the fear they had experienced before, to hear that this is Joseph, this one who has all this power in Egypt, they must have been beyond terrified now. And he could see it in their eyes. He could see the fear and terror in their eyes. But Joseph, what he says next, he tells them, "Don't be distressed. Don't be angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life." Don't be angry at yourselves. What? More like, just drop dead now. Kiss my feet. I want you to see today what Joseph did, but I also want you to see why Joseph did it. Let's step back. Let's see what Joseph has done here, this whole story. I want you to see that from the moment Joseph saw them and recognized them, Joseph started blessing them. Sure, he tested them. Of course he tested them. The last time he had seen them, they had tried to kill him. The last memory he had of them was Joseph trading him in for a bag of money. So of course Joseph tested them to find out what happened to his family over these last 13 years. Of course he did. But while he was testing them, Joseph blessed them at every turn. Free food, free food. Saving their lives and their children's lives, their children's children's lives, treating them to a banquet, preparing, we'll see this next week, he was preparing the best land in Egypt for his family so they could come and live there with him. After everything that had happened to him, Joseph could have used this reversal as a revenge tour, couldn't he have? He could have started with that cupbearer. Remember the cupbearer who forgot Joseph? Joseph helped him out in prison by telling him what his dream would be and giving him peace. And then that cupbearer for 2 years forgot about Joseph. Joseph could have said, "Come here, cupbearer. I want you to go inside this little hole here. Yep, I'll come back in a few minutes." And then gone away and then showed up 2 years later and said, "I'm sorry, I forgot," and let him out. Revenge tour. He could have gone, showed up at Potiphar's door and said, "Hey, remember how you unjustly threw me in prison because of your wife and you knew? You're in jail now. You're fired. You're out of here." He could have taken his wife, thrown her in the pit. He could have tracked down the slave traders who dragged him to Egypt and sold him and punished them. And then piece de resistance, he could have found his brothers. And what could he have done to them? At the very minimum, no food for you. Get out of here. You're gone. Or he could have given them the old chief baker treatment and cut their heads off. Or he could have at least made them slaves. Or if he didn't want to be aggressive, if he wanted to be more like modern day people, you and me, he could have chosen to be passive aggressive and do it the way we do it. He could have resented them inside and given them the cold shoulder, could have hated them, could have extorted them. He could have treated them badly, talked badly about them behind their backs, undermined their reputations. He could have done all that passive aggressive stuff you and I do. Civilized people. But I want you to see, God's word wants us to see that when the tables turned, Joseph started serving. When the shoe was on the other foot, Joseph started washing feet. When Joseph found himself with power, he put that power to work in God's hands. He refused to use it for selfish revenge. That's what Joseph did. Why did Joseph do it? Why did Joseph use his power that way and live this way? We saw it last week when Pharaoh observed that there was no one else like Joseph in all of Egypt. And he said, can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God? When the Spirit of God is in you, you put your power in God's hands and you use whatever power you have for God's purposes, in God's way. That's who you and I become when the Spirit of God is in us. That means we use our power to serve others, to wash feet, to love others, to love what is good and confront what is evil. That's what Joseph did. We don't use it to do passive-aggressive things and tear people down behind their backs to get them back for what they did to us. No, we use our power to build people up and wash feet, even the feet of those who've hurt us and betrayed us. That's what Joseph did. He put his power in God's hands, used it for God's purposes. Joseph saw everything in his life through one lens, God's plan. And that changed the way Joseph saw his life. He didn't see himself as a victim of all the evil things people did to him. He easily could have with everything he'd gone through. Instead, what he saw himself as the beneficiary of God's intentions. So all the bad and evil things people did to him, he saw God working and he saw God's intentions through it all and in it all. God's intention to bring about something good, not just for Joseph, not just for Joseph's family, but even for the world. Joseph didn't use his power to get revenge and retribution because he put his power in God's hands because the Spirit of God was in him. Now you might object, or you might say that, you know, it's a lot easier to do that when you're on top and everything has worked out for you. You know, if you find $1,000, it's kind of easier to give someone a buck. And it, you know, Joseph now, everything's worked out for him, so it's easy for him to do this. And if you're one thinking that it would be easier, if, you know, if I knew everything was on top and if I knew I was coming out on top, it would be easier to live this way. Then first of all, I want to point out to you this. If you've been paying attention to Joseph's life, what you've seen is he's done this at every step. He has always done this. This isn't new. When he was a slave, he was a conduit of God's blessing to his master. When he was a prisoner, he was a conduit of God's blessing to the other prisoners and to the warden. Now that he's on top and the tables have turned and the shoe's on the other foot, he leans even harder into being a blessing to others. Every increase in power in Joseph's life did not lead to an increase in privilege for himself. Every increase in power in Joseph's life, he turned into an increase in serving others and blessing others. That's how he used his power. Whether he had a lot or a little, that's how Joseph acted and lived. And the second thing I'd say to anyone who thinks that you need to succeed or just know that everything is turning out okay for you before you can maybe be this way, I would say this. I would ask you this. Have you met Jesus? Do you know about what Jesus did for you? Do you know how Jesus humbled himself and used his power to wash our feet and to serve us? Do you know about how Jesus died and rose from the grave, overcoming sin and death and offering you and me new life, a whole new life, a whole new relationship with God, where our guilt is taken away, our chains are gone, we're set free and we're forgiven, and sin and death are behind us? Are you aware that if you've put your faith in Jesus, Everything has worked out for you. It's already won in Jesus. And if you don't know that, then that's the starting point today. To come to that place of that confidence, of that assurance that, yes, we're going through struggles in life, but Jesus has already overcome it. I've already come out on top with him. And that's why, yes, I can be gregarious with my power and I can give it generously because my chains are gone and I've been set free. Already overcome this world with sin and suffering. And my eternity is secure in him. And in Jesus, I'm blessed beyond my wildest comprehension. Once you have that foundation, that's when you and I can ask the next question. So first, if you don't have that foundation today, I invite you to that foundation. I invite you to ask Jesus to forgive your sin and to lead your life. You don't have to pray some crazy prayer or do anything. Just talk to Jesus. Say, please forgive me. I see what you've done. I see how you used your power to serve us. Forgive me. But then the next question you and I ask, because most of us have already done that first part, the next question we've got to ask is this. And look, I don't know where you are at in your life right now, whether you're in a place where you feel like you have a lot of power or you're in a place where you feel like you have very little power. Honestly, it doesn't matter. However much power you think you have right now, the question stays the same. How are you using the power that you have right now, today? Are you using it selfishly for revenge, for retribution, to get even, or are you using it to serve and to wash feet? Worship team, would you begin to make your way back? The way Jesus used his power was, he emptied himself, humbled himself, he washed feet, and he told his disciples, anyone who is going to be like him and follow him should do the same. That this is what power looks like. Power looks like blessing others and serving. Everyone who's full of the Holy Spirit uses their power this way. So just take a moment and ask Holy Spirit to speak to you. Where have I been using my power, Lord? How have I been using my power? Whether it be little or much. Have I been using my power to make a life for myself? Have I been using my power to punish others? To carry out grudges and retribution? My own brand of justice on them? Insisting on making people pay in the petty ways we do? Or are we living in the freedom that you've already given us, that our chains are gone and we've been set free, free to forgive, free to love, free to be like you. Lord Jesus, help us to understand what it means that our chains are gone and to use our power the right way.